know you don't want to be injured all your life, but don't settle that case tonight. I said it's not too late. And I don't remember what I read, don't remember what they said. I guess it doesn't matter, I guess it doesn't matter anymore. You're gonna go to the expert store. You're
one time, baby. One time, money. Yeah, one take, that's
tell
it.
The jury what it wants to hear. They tell me it's cool, but I just don't believe it. Sell out.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Justice Team Podcast. That was our very own Grayson Goody with... What would you call that? Expert shop? Expert store?
Sell out?
Okay. Yeah. A very fitting topic for our expert deposition, expert cross-examination topic today. Before we introduce our panel, Murat has made us a special cocktail on a very nice, hot winter day in Santa Ana here.
That's right. So I figured, why not cool off with a cocktail that I've been working on for a good decade? You've all heard about the margarita. This right here, the Muratarita. So, cheers to you all. I hope you enjoy it.
What makes it a Murata meet? Murat Ariga.
Muratarita.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah.
Brandon's done four podcasts today. Give
him
a break.
I've had 10 margaritas.
Yeah, he's had 10.
Unfortunately.
It just made my Murat.
I'm working with a company on a distribution agreement at the moment, so I can't get into the contents of it.
But if you've learned that recipe while working for here...
No.
It's our product.
You brought that in.
I invented it 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just serving it today.
Yeah. So this job is just a placeholder for you until BevMo or...
The Muratarita is going to be the next claw.
Okay. Very nice. All right. So our topic today is expert depositions, expert cross-examination. So we will introduce to my left, we have Goodfish, trial team of Goodfish, we call them, Grayson Goody.
Hello, hello.
Who sang that wonderful song for us,
mm-hmm.
Sevi Willard Fisher.
Hello, hello.
Who, by the way, is a OCTLA Top Gun Award winner. And to my right is the most recent OCTLA Top Gun Gun.
What's up?
Atticus.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having
introduce
me.
Introduce
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, buddy.
Atticus Wegman, Aiken Cone. Glad to be here.
And to Atticus's right is BB.
Hi.
BB Fell, coming all the way from San Diego. We got some awesome trial attorneys here. I mean, combined, what do you guys have, like 1,000 trials?
At least.
Yeah, at least. So we're gonna split this into two topics. We're going to talk about depositions, because I assume, you know, expert cross-exam at trial is going to be a little different than your depositions most of the time, not always. So I want to start from, in California now we have that new law where they produce their file 3 days before deposition, right? So you get a chance to peek at their file, see what their studies are, their opinions, their billing. So Atticus, whenever you get that file, what's your process usually?
Well, I go through it to see where the heck their opinions are right away.
Sometimes they're not in there.
And sometimes they're not in there, but usually it's like Dropbox or something like that. I'll get it. I know that's how I sent it out for our experts to get it done, but I just sift through it right away to see where their opinions are. And hopefully they have it in a nice little tidy one-sheet sort of document.
They won't.
And they won't. They never do. So you're kind of just running through that. And then sometimes you'll get a record review. And if there's any really important medical record I'm worried about in my case, I want to see how they summarized it in their record review. So I look for their opinions right away, really.
Sevi, anything you're looking for in particular in that nice juicy file you got 3 days before, 3 business days before the deposition?
No, just sort of same thing Atticus was saying. I do like to, you know, check out where the opinions are if it's something easy to find. But other than that, no, just I like to comb the entire file, even their medical. Some things that may not seem as important or may seem kind of tedious is going over their medical record review, which is often just copying and pasting from the records they reviewed. But sometimes you can find some gold in there. Maybe there's like a statement about how the incident happened and it's wrong in one medical record, and then that expert will adopt that and it'll make them look foolish when they testify as to how the incident happened, and they don't give you causation, and then you can just kind of blow them up on that at trial. But yeah, I think it's important to go through the entire thing page by page. It takes a long time, but definitely worth it. You can find some gold in, you know, record review, correspondence, you know, things like that.
Gray, BB? Anything else you're looking for in there?
If there are any articles, I mean, almost any article that any expert cites to, there's good and bad for them. So if they produce any articles in their file, I'm pretty sure there's going to be something good in there for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
because it's always the perfect study, right? It always lines up perfectly with the dynamics of the accident. It's always done in the United States.
They don't misconstrue it, yeah, anything like that.
Live participants, bumper cars, yeah, right. 18 years old, no degeneration. My client's 80.
We're talking about getting before the deposition, you know, sort of the procedural things you do. You get the file, you get a chance to take a peek at the file. What about videotaping? Are we videotaping every deposition we do, every expert deposition we do?
Absolutely.
If they're, we're talking retained experts.
We're talking about defense experts.
100%.
Mm-hmm. I don't every time, and I should do it more, but... it's kind of a cost analysis you got to gauge on your cases. If your case has value, certainly, or if it's not as an essential or threatening of a deposition, I'm not sure I'll videotape it.
Maybe like an economist.
Exactly. A defendant's economist, I don't feel the need to, you know, videotape them for the 45 minutes they tell me their numbers.
45, Sevi, what's your record for an economist?
Like 12.
That was actually just beat, I think, yesterday by Sienna. a 10-minute depo.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Well, wow.
It's easier if you have a mark to beat. You know, he set the mark. And mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. I think any major deposition in your case where there's going to be a threat, you got to videotape it.
I think also a good reason to videotape it is oftentimes, especially with the defense side, is they'll designate people that they've never talked to about the case. They'll just say, hey, can we retain you? Sure. And I think it's important to videotape all depots because you may get some gold from their experts and then they may not call them.
Yeah.
Right? So it's oftentimes great, a great trial strategy. Defense up there crossing your expert for an hour on something that their own expert agreed to in deposition. And then you just, right after that, you just play that in your case in chief per the code like you can. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what did he just waste all your guys' time doing that for?
And he looks foolish too because he just got the file and he's, I don't know how to answer the question. Exactly. And now you play it and it just looks miserable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we try to do this at our firm a lot. Not every judge will allow it, but how are Atticus, BB, how do you guys feel about playing expert depositions, defense expert depositions in opening or in your case in chief, if you can get away with it?
Oh, I love doing it in opening, because if you can get that one little sound bite, I mean, it just totally sets
objection,
the tone.
Objection, it's prejudicial.
This is somebody who's been paid by the defense to give their testimony in that case, and they're admitting this one thing. And like Sevi said, even if you touch on it in opening, guarantee you the defense is going to waste a lot of time on that one issue that their expert already admitted.
Right. Yeah, a little cautionary tale, though. I would not overdo the playing videos in opening. Just if they're really small, short sound bites, play them, because opening's not evidence, and you got to replay those in order to get them into evidence. So if you play a clip in opening, it's not in evidence yet. You have to replay it in your case in chief, and then the jury's sitting there going, well, what the hell? Like, why? We already saw this, and they don't know the difference. So that's something that's, you know, to be aware of, because we've played things in opening before, and then we're telling the judge, like, oh, you get there, and you're like, oh, I got to play these again. You know, thankfully, in that case, we just had stipulation with the defense that it was in evidence, but something to think about if you've got 30 minutes of clips in opening.
Yeah.
BB brought up a really good point of something that she tries to look for in the file before the deposition is studies and articles. I've had this conversation with you, Sevi, before. You know, how important is that, BB, to find what they're relying on and finding the study and doing the due diligence on what they're relying on?
Yeah, I usually go into it trying to find just those nuggets, those little sound bites from the article. Because if you really get into the weeds on this article and when that was created and the population that was used and other subsequent articles, I think it's just boring. But you're looking for that one little sound bite. Mm-hmm.
It's effective.
There's one biomechanics study that one particular relies upon. And I think one of the people in the study were throwing up at the scene.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Okay,
I think it was the pig you're talking about. Yeah, they're saying that nobody can get injured in like a 4 delta V.
Wasn't this guy throwing up at the scene?
Yeah, and it's like, well, did you see the person who was throwing up after they were in a 4 delta V? And he's like, no, I don't remember that. Well, it's right here. He's like, oh, well, I'll remember that next time.
And Sevi, you've gotten into fights before about them not actually bringing the studies to the deposition.
Yep, I'll reserve my right for a second depo. If it's not, oftentimes these guys are they're the same jokers in every case, these biomechanics, and they always rely on at least 30 articles. And if I get that three-day production and those articles are not in there, I say, hey, get your expert to give me all these articles. It's just, you know, the three-day rule, it's a good thing in certain respects, but I think it's really important in cases that are very document-heavy like articles. Your biomechanics, yeah. I love the three-day rule because you need 3 days mm-hmm. in order to go through all those articles. And uh-huh. I go through those articles one by one, and I show at deposition, I just set them up and show how they're different, whether it's live participants, if it's allowed, whether there was research or bias, because the owner of the person who's publishing or the group that's publishing and doing the live participants participated in the study. It's called research or bias. That's completely improper. And just try to analogize it to show how it's different than your client. Oftentimes, those people all have MRIs before their study to make sure their spines are good to be subjected to 5-7 miles per hour, whatever it is. So it's really important. And sometimes the studies will give you something great, like not to be used in litigation, or, you know, this is not accurate for, you know, litigation purposes. And then you just beat them over the head with that stuff mm-hmm. and they have no way to recover. But it's important because those guys hide those articles. There's at least 30 of them. And another really good question, I think, for depositions with when it comes to those articles is they have, you know, I'll bring all the articles to deposition, 30, 40, 50, whatever. Tell me exactly which articles you relied on in this case for your specific opinions.
Well, they're all just kind of go into the general.
Well, no. 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 I want to know exactly which ones are most related. If you can't give me exact related, I want to know which ones are most related to your opinions and apply to this case. More often than not, they'll give you like 5, and then those 5 will still be complete dog shit.
Mm-hmm. And even with that 3-day rule too, you always got to make sure that you get all their materials at the deposition because they never turn everything over. Whether it's some additional correspondence, some more invoices, some more studies.
Well, I got to pay to get that journal, counsel. I have to. It's a,
I just buy
I'll
it.
Write you a check. I'll just get it
online.
Right.
The best ones are the ones that they don't provide, and they're like, oh, there's you know, you got to buy that. I can't produce that. Go buy that because there's gold in those ones. Mm-hmm. They're not
or the ones that they wrote.
Yep.
Yeah.
That exactly. they try to not produce. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
It's great.
Oh yeah. How much time do you spend on their CV? I mean, the stuff that they wrote.
I typically never will do anything on their CV. The only thing that I'll do, and I did really. This, yeah. I did this in a case actually that I recently had with BB, is I knew that this guy had written like just a boatload of articles on our specific injury and done all these presentations. And so I told him early on, I said, I've read all your articles and I've seen all your presentations. So that
before
if
the
he
started
messing, yeah. So if he started messing around in the deposition, I would say, isn't it true that you've said this before? And he would look at me like,
he wouldn't know. Yeah.
I think I did, even if I didn't know that he said that. So I don't know. I always try to play like I've seen all their stuff.
Use your methodology with Murat when I come into the office and I ask him fantasy baseball. Well, he says, just so you know, I've already read all of your Twitter postings about this particular pitcher. So I know what you actually think about, for instance, Alberto Mondesi. I already know. So don't try to feed me any dog shit. Nonsense answers.
Stop sneaking into my DMs, bro.
we're all hitting on a really important topic is do your research on these guys and gals. You know, before a depo, I like obsess over going like on their Twitter, and you know, I went back and read tweets from like 2015 forward, and this guy was tweeting at least 5 times a week, and I literally read every single one of them. 3 hours just laying in bed, you know, reading.
I remember that the trial you had up in the Bay Area where it was right before my daughter was born on that billing expert. And I was waiting for, you know, my wife was in labor, not delivering yet, but I was just, we were sitting there.
How pregnant was she?
I remember looking up,
how far along?
Looking up that billing expert, going through her whole Facebook just because it was so bored. We had to wait like 12 hours and just looking and looking and looking. And I found so much gold. You'd be surprised at what these people put on social media, what you can find just Googling their name, expert, defense expert, so and so.
Did you just say my wife was having a baby? It was so boring.
No. Let's let the record be clear here.
That's
not
what
we're saying.
First of all, it's a HIPAA violation. Okay. Second of all, it took you know a whole day to get. So we were waiting. You can only watch Vegas Vacation on A&E
so
many
times. Right.
So I want to talk about quickly before we get into some you know some actual concessions and stuff you can get in expert deposition. Some of the stuff you absolutely have to hit in every expert deposition.
Yeah. I think we all kind of have the same probable outline that we use, get their opinions, get the basis for their opinions, get what records they reviewed for their opinions. That's kind of the basic.
What records they didn't review.
Or records mm-hmm. they didn't review, yeah. But like you said concessions. I think that's just key. Like, you can get so much out of the defense experts. I mean, if you have a substantial factor case, just get the defense expert to say there was some injury. Mm-hmm. Now substantial factor's off the verdict form. You don't have that issue. Or if you have a surgery recommendation, you know, that we have and the defense says, no, I don't think surgery's recommended and so forth, who cares? Just talk to them about the surgery. Have you done the surgery before? Yes. How long is it? What kind of informed consent do you need? Get them to talk about how bad the surgery it is, and then you can right. have them help you with your damages case by just saying, like, yeah, that's a gnarly freaking surgery. Guess who believes it's a gnarly surgery? Defense expert, right? You know. Mm-hmm.
So let's hit, so before that. We get into concessions, you always, every time you probably want to hit bias, right? Go through how many times they've worked for.
Right.
What is Bob uses a good line. He says, "Who's your number one?" Because you can't say insurance company, right?
The person
who pays?
The person paying your
who's
bills.
Your number one customer? You know, who mm. pays your.
Or establish who's paying them the check, and then yeah. they say State Farm. Okay, so the people paying your check in this case, how many times you work for right. them, and then just use that instead right. of
one thing,
insurance.
And one thing I like to do, it's just a little bit of a different, it's not necessarily asking different questions, it's asking them in a different way. I like to read their prior depos, and I think it's more of a, hey, look, I have control, I know what you're going to say, and it's intimidating to them. I think right. it's you're more likely to get concessions about the stuff that you really need if you start a depo off, hey man, what's up, you know, like you're still doing
90%,
right? Hey man, are you still at 90-10 since yeah. I saw you last time? Yeah, you still referring your spine patients over to Dr. So-and-so. Yeah. Oh, okay. You still, you know, you've done seminars for defense attorneys and adjusters. Yeah. And, you know, you show them, like, you know, I've had that happen where this guy, I've met him for the first time, but I read a bunch of his prior depos, and I get in there and I just start doing this stuff, and he kind of looks up at me. He's like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy knows about me. And then you get to the causation stuff, and sir, you would agree that, you know, this was all necessitated because of the incident. He just, yep.
So this word concessions keeps coming up. BB, I want to ask you, I mean, how much time are you spending in the weeds talking about the science and all of that? How much time are you actually just getting sound bites, concessions, getting stuff to set them up for trial?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I want to make sure I understand the opinion. And then when I'm in that phase of just understanding the opinion, I don't really care how it comes out on the transcript. I just want to make sure that I get it. And I'm not like the stupid person in the room who, you know, walks out still just as stupid. But within that, like, I grab every soundbite that I can. And as far as that expert will go with me, I will take as much time as is needed. And I take them out a little bit by a little bit by a little bit by a little bit until they start saying, no, well, I'm not going to give you that.
So give me some examples of maybe some concessions you're looking for with, say, the spine case, you know, the lumbar fusion case. What type of – and you're deposing the neurosurgeon, the defense neurosurgeon. What type of things are you maybe trying to get out of them to set them up for a trial, concessions-wise?
Yeah. So, you know, for example, everybody's got – degenerative disc disease to some extent. So I might push them out on the age or the percentage of the number of people at this certain age that have it. I may push them out on trying to get that they were unusually susceptible because they were 40 years old and it was nothing but the fact that they were 40 that they had some prior degenerative disc disease that made this, you know, maybe it's not a high speed crash, maybe it's not a huge property damage case, but that you're pushing out this unusually susceptible concept.
Yeah, you brought up a good one, Atticus. You know, just get them to say that there was an injury caused by.
Right. I like what Sevi said, actually. I just did that recently. It was kind of cut to the chase. Let me spend the first 10 minutes of knocking out all the BS nonsense. You work for defense 90%, Weinstein, yes. And you make $800,000 a year, yes. And Mike McGuire is a regular employer of yours, yes. Knock out all the simple stuff. And then you get into their opinions. But I don't try to get too bogged down in their science, right? Because you're never going to win the science game against them, my opinion. But what you said is you can get your concessions out of, you know, my client was 50 at the time, so she would have responded differently to this crash than a 21-year-old with a healthy spine, right? Yes. So she was susceptible more so than a 21-year-old. Now you got the jury instruction on usually susceptible. You can play to the jury and get them to admit it. But, I mean, you get a lot of the basic stuff, right? Any 90-year-old can be have a degenerative spine. They'll all admit that. And most a lot of them don't have any pain at all, right? So degeneration doesn't equal pain. So that's like another concession.
Sevy Gray, any other concessions you're trying to get?
Another one is if you can't get any of those like typical concessions that you're getting and you're really thinking this is a substantial factor case, then you ask them, hey, had this crash not happened, when would this person have started having neck pain?
I don't know.
Had this crash
happened? Yeah, exactly. I'm speculative. How am I supposed to know?
Exactly.
3 to 6 months.
Exactly.
3 to 6.
Yeah. And the substantial factor instruction really has that in there. So if you ask them those questions and they don't know, then you put that up and the jury says, oh, okay, well, substantial factor, that's easy. That checks off. Another thing that's kind of, you know, tangential to this on substantial factor that I think is important, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day, is property damage. If you have property damage and it's not settled out before the trial, boom, you get substantial factor every single time. Mm. So I've been thinking on if your client has insurance and they pay their property damage, you buy that subrogation lien from them. And so you're able to put forth that property damage at trial and you can tell the jury, these guys didn't even pay for his fucking property damage. And then boom, substantial factor, you get it. So that's something that we don't necessarily always do, but I think it's something that we should think about doing.
And use the language in the substantial factor jury instruction. Don't use substantial factor.
Right.
Sir, you would agree that
it's this, more than a remote this, or trivial factor yeah, that causes. Is, yeah, it's more than a remote or trivial. Yeah. Sure. Or thank you.
Another thing that's helpful, sometimes when defense attorneys just want to fight you on that, you know, giving you the surgery or the injury, you might ask them, well, you know, especially when they say, and specifically when they say, oh, you would have needed this surgery anyway. Okay, I understand that because of the degeneration. Okay. But would you at least agree with me, doctor, that this incident at least advanced that surgery to needing to be done a little bit sooner? It was at least a factor in making it have to happen sooner. Right. And then you lock them in on that, too. And then they just sound ridiculous because they often say yes. But the top things I want to get out of a doctor depo, I want to defeat all the defenses, hit the degeneration thing. Everybody has degeneration. Majority of people in their 30s, 40s, 50s have degeneration to some degree in their spine. I want to defeat the lien defense. Doctor, you've treated on a lien before. Doctor, you've been referred patients by attorneys before, correct? Yes. I want to hit the causation stuff, all the, you know, reasonable and customary costs, you know, and hopefully you're done.
And then one that we're overlooking, Kenemer.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Always Kenemer. Yeah. Always say, these are your final opinions. Yeah. And you can actually cut out some of their opinions, too, because they'll typically say, yeah, I'm ready for this thing to be over. Yeah. But always Kenemer.
And then I like Atticus's one. He's go through the surgery, how extensive it is. You agree it's pretty gnarly surgery.
Right.
Well, I think you could take them. They have to admit that stuff. They've done the surgery before.
Oh,
you've
easy.
Done
it. I do it in house.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about it.
You're though. Using them as a general
when you talk
damage.
To your, yeah, when you use them as a general
yeah,
damage.
I love that.
And you can also use them, and I think, is you can use them to build up support for your motion and limine, right? So. You know, for instance, if they're trying to bring a radiologist into a case and they already have a surgeon involved, have the surgeon admit, I reviewed all the imaging. I'm the smartest guy in the world. I know how to review imaging. I can do X-rays.
Because the one thing
CTs,
defense experts never
and
do
you
is
say,
talk
you don't
to
need
another.
Both these experts, Your Honor. You already got Dr. So-and-so over here. That's the best in the world. Let him do it.
How often do defense experts actually communicate with one another?
Like never.
Almost
yeah,
never.
Yeah, right.
So before we move on to... you know, cross-examine, maybe we'll play Family Feud. I want to ask, is there kind of a temperature gauge? Is there sometimes where you don't hold back, where you really go, you know, full assault impeachment mode on these MFers? Or is it always kind of, we'll just hold it for trial, we'll wait to really pull out the big guns? Or is there some cases where we need to settle it, let's just hammer them?
That's exactly what you said. If I need to settle the case and I'm trying to scare them to settle it and we got a 998 like outstanding, I'll go, you know, all out and impeach them and really hammer them on their opinions.
I actually have a really hard time setting experts up for trial and holding back. You know, I really do. I just want to hammer them so hard. Unless I truly believe a case is going to trial, I'll throw some, you know, some blows. But, you know, I would say if there's something really important that he gives you, you know, or something really important you need, like a, you know, a reasonable cost of a lumbar surgery, for example, and he's said it in the past, I had a depo recently where I said, you know, doctor, you've testified before that reasonable and customary cost for a single level lumbar fusion is anywhere from $80,000 to $125,000. Well, I don't really remember that testimony. Rather than wait for trial and fumble with certified transcript and somebody, you know, saying maybe, oh, you know, you're impeaching him improperly or whatever, just before a judge even gets involved, I just showed him his depo. I said, you remember this case? I just saw you 4 months ago. You said that, didn't you? Oh, I guess I did. In that case, I want that opinion. I want that testimony locked down because he supports my meds and contradicts his own billing expert. So in instances like that, yeah. But then I also had the same guy who got the incident wrong. He, you know, was I deposed him and I said, how'd the incident happen? My lady got crushed by a guy bigger than me. A 75-year-old lady was at the bottom of a water slide at the Omni, got crushed from behind, you know, immediate neck myelop, like emergency cervical disc replacement surgery. And I saw in the medical records in his record review that the ambulance report actually said, you know, so and so hit head on slide. So I thought, oh, I bet he's going to go to that if I ask him. So I just kind of baited him. I said, sir, you know, you understand we're here for an incident, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you understand my client had neck pain. Yeah. How'd the incident happen? I just asked him like I didn't know. Yeah. And he said, well, you know, Miss So-and-so hit her head on the slide. Okay, and you would agree that that caused her at least a neck sprain, right? I just moved on because I wanted that for trial, showing that this guy doesn't know that, you know, she got whacked from behind by a 200-pound guy, and he's not giving me causation for the surgery.
He's underestimating, undervaluing, yeah.
So that kind of stuff, I think that's one of those things where you're like, oh, gotcha moment in trial. Yeah. That you hold back on, but if you really need something to prove your case, you know, I think go on it.
If in doubt, I do the impeachment in the deposition because, you know, you're going to have a lawyer on the other side who's preparing for trial and reading and looking for vulnerabilities. So I don't want to give the expert the opportunity to have weeks or months to come up with an explanation that I'm going to hear for the first time at trial. I want to put him on the spot, get the explanation right then and there, because it's probably not going to be as good.
Right. I'm with you.
All right. So we're going to move into cross-exam. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about different goals in cross-examination, different techniques. But before we do, we're going to play the feud. Yeah. Cue the music, Timmy. We don't have it. All right. We can add it in later. Okay. So we have Goodfish to my left. And we have Atticus and BB. If you want to come up with a fun name,
Atticus. Atticus
I'm
fell.
I'm sorry, BB.
Atticus fell.
Atticus fell. Yeah, that's not bad.
So Atticus fell.
No, you could do that with anything. Sevy fell.
That's why she's got a great last name.
So, no particular order. We'll let our guests go first. BB, oh, I'm sorry, Atticus fell. We the biggest mistakes you can make on a cross exam. I have six answers, no particular order. If you get the answer right, you can keep going.
Not having control, I think.
Do you want to confer with her first?
No. I definitely meant to do that.
But that is an answer.
I can hear you.
Yeah, you never ask a question. You don't know the answer.
Let's get the easy money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get the low-hanging fruit. Never ask a question that you don't know the answer to.
Correct. That's on there. And why don't you do that?
Because that could blow up in your face, and you could look like you just gave them a softball that they actually did just rope it out of the park for 3
And I also have kind of on that same lines is allowing them to explain a little more than...
You can't stop them. They might go off and off and off and off, and then you try to stop them, and then you look like the mean person trying to stop the guy that you gave the really nice question to, right? Like...
This nice doctor.
Yeah, geez, he's really nice. What are you? Why are you trying to be mean to him now?
Merrick, okay. Can I get a refill?
Oh, yeah. So, any?
Oh, is that what
you get
doing?
To play again? Yeah. You have another answer. Biggest mistakes on cross examination.
I don't have to pee bad enough. And cut. Huh? Yeah.
I'm gonna need an answer.
10 second timer.
All right, I'm going to need an answer.
Well, it kind of dovetails from the first, but not having control and not asking leading questions.
They're all kind of in that
You have leading questions on there. You have to.
they're all kind of in the same.
You grouped that all in one.
Same umbrella.
I'm gonna move it to Goodfish. Yeah. I need a
little.
Oh,
that buzzer's horrible.
Should I go with the first one?
Yeah, go with the one we talked about.
So our first one is don't be rude.
Yeah, combative, argumentative. Yeah. Don't make the expert feel like a sympathetic witness.
Right.
Right. What else?
Jeez. How many do you have?
They get a key.
I have six total. So
winner stays on.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's hard when you don't make mistakes on cross examination. I don't know them.
Well, you've tried cases with Sevi before, right?
I mean,
I'm gonna need an answer. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Don't misstate the evidence.
Knowing your evidence, knowing your records.
So preparing for not taking the time to understand the literature or prior testimony. Yeah. So not doing the prep work. Okay? Mm. Keep going.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Maybe on the flip side of the other one.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm just going to start naming them. We got dead air here. Getting too deep into the science.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Don't get into the weeds. Yeah. Mm.
Taking too long to make your point, mm-hmm. Trying to prove every single fact and boring the jury, right? Mm. Something Atticus knows all too well.
Yeah, right. Shut up.
And the other one I had, I think we already kind of touched on it, though, was allowing the expert to kind of weasel out of their answer and not cutting them
off. Yeah, who made
the
comment about being the right tone with the expert? Goodfish did. That's a good point, actually. In my early cases that I tried, I remember I was a little bit more aggressive than I wanted to be with a female. She was either a billing expert or she was an economist. I can't remember, but I remember catching myself going, whoa, this isn't like, the
easy Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, right. So just keep your tone nice because the jury doesn't want to see you being aggressive with the sweet, nice rehab specialist.
I like it's a male. Way too.
Time and place. Yeah.
So I had a case where I had a defense expert up on the stand and I impeached him. Just textbook impeachment, no emotion, 3 times in a row. And he looked at me and said, God, I feel like I'm arguing with my wife right now.
Ooh.
So I
thought
said
that on the record.
Said that on the record. Whoa. I actually have the transcript.
Wow.
And
that's evidence.
I thought I thought that gave me permission to kind of go at him.
Yeah, it did.
But not with everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So some people still thought I was too hard on him.
Yeah. Wow.
The men?
No, it was a woman.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, even when you think it's time, it's often not time.
The Maradorita.
So that's actually a good dovetail. So we're going to talk about cross-exam and kind of your different, I guess, techniques and goals with cross-examination. So when do you know, it's a temperature thing you probably have to take, but when do you know when you're done with an expert witness on cross-exam? When do you know kind of the line? When do you know when to move on or say I'm done with this witness?
I think you can get a lot just based on the juror's energy and looking at the jurors. Sometimes they're just, I've had crosses that I've done where I'm like, super prepared for and, I really want to kill this witness. And then,
literally want to kill this witness.
And then, 20 minutes goes by or whatever, and everyone's just, you see the jurors over it, so you just wrap it up.
Yeah, we get it.
When the jurors go from looking at the witness to looking away from the witness.
Yeah.
Like this. When they turn their back on the witness, that's definitely a good cue. Mm. Also, when your co-counsel goes, sit down.
That's enough.
Yeah, you probably want to end on a high note, right?
Always. And even save something that is good for rebuttal, but make sure you can somehow squeeze it in to the redirect so you don't get the argument that it's out of the scope, right? Because you're going to objection that's out of the scope. So make sure whatever you save has some power, because you got to end on a high note at every moment, even if your cross is 5 minutes or 30. But I prefer the shorter cross with defense guys. You don't want to jump in the weeds on ridiculopathy and dermatomes. You ain't probably going to win that one every time.
Yeah, I think get in, score some points, get out. As long as you're asking questions, you're giving an opportunity to hurt your case.
Ooh, that's a good one.
In general, we're probably going to spend more time on depositions than a cross-exam. But in general, what's your goal? Obviously, the goal is to undermine their opinion. What's the best way to do this at cross-exam? You know, how do you are you messing with the science? Are you trying to attack their foundation? Are you going after their bias? What's the best way to usually go after them on cross-exam?
I think it depends on the case.
Sure. And the expert, probably, the type of expert.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, their opinions are what they are. So if they're, you know, very against you or just don't make sense, I think it's good to either start or end with bias and bookend the other one with concessions that they do agree with you with. So sometimes I might just be like, hey, you know, doctor, before, you know, there's some things we disagree with, you know, in this case, your doctor and my doctor, right? Yeah. Let's talk about the things we agree with each other first. Hit those first so the jury goes, oh, man, yeah, like, you know, he's injured. He's got this injury, just maybe not the severity. Then talk about the things he doesn't disagree with you maybe a little bit, and then hit him with the bias. And that obviously can be done in many different ways depending on the expert and what they say in deposition and at trial. But that's what I like to do.
Let's maybe take a step back and do like a macro view. BB, how do you... When you're dealing with
zoom out
when you're preparing for an expert cross, where do you start? What's your process like in general?
Yeah, so I mean, I can tell you exactly what my process is. I read through the deposition. I'm really, really hesitant to ask that question because I have no control if they go off the rails.
Right.
Yeah, I do it the exact same way. I go through the depo.
Sure, you do.
Yeah, I know. She did such a good job.
I shoot free throws exactly like Michael Jordan.
BB's easy to follow because you're closing my eyes. What she said, I do.
Agreed. Yeah, that was good.
He plays basketball. It's exactly how I play basketball.
Yeah, that's I do it like that. But I mean, it's the concessions that we all have our own independent discretion on that we get out of our depositions, and you use those to your advantage. I guess I sprinkle in bias more. I don't start out of the gate and go 10 minutes into bias and get them all. I'll hit them with some bias.
Because your expert's going to get hit with bias too.
Right. But I save some bias if kind of as like my ammunition in the back if things start going bad. I always got a couple extra bias questions that I haven't had you admit that I can kind of save my tail if things aren't going well, right? Like, you do work for defense 90%, right, doctor? You know, and then you still kind of end on a high
note. I don't know why. They just hire me.
Yeah, right.
More than you guys do.
And experts say the craziest things in deposition. I mean, if you just let them talk for a while, and it's things that you can use oftentimes. So I had a shoulder injury case in a rear end case. And the expert, at some point during the deposition, I said, you know, his opinion was that it you could never get a shoulder injury from this type of accident. I said, well, what circumstances could you envision that this type of injury would occur? And he said, well, if she was driving on a cliff and went over the guardrail and the car flipped 3 times, not 2 times, not 1 time, but 3 times, and then when it came to rest, burst into flames.
Okay.
Yeah. So that definitely came out in trial because it was just so ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think if they won't give you what you want through concessions, you can still phrase it so it's such that, hey, doctor, it wouldn't be unreasonable for my client to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist, right? You don't think that'd be unreasonable. You don't think that's below the standard of care.
Yeah,
you don't
think my doctor's the big one, right?
You don't think my doctor's committing medical malpractice by treating her, do you? You're not going to go that far.
Yeah.
And it's not unreasonable that she actually – pain is subjective. Yes, it's intermittent. Waxes, all the things you can get out of them, yeah. But you can use that.
One of the same questions along the same line is, doctor, it's reasonable for a patient to follow their doctor's orders, right?
Hmm.
That's one I like.
That's a good one, too, because oftentimes our clients are doing just that, right?
Exactly.
Can't blame them for doing what they're told, right? They don't have a medical education, right? That's a good one.
Grayson, Sevi, what's your kind of process when you're starting your cross-exam outlines? Or
I don't really have a process, to be honest. Like, I just kind of take it, it just depends, you know. Like, I just take it, obviously page line the depo, summarize it, you know. Oftentimes there'll be a mountain of old depositions.
You're summarizing the depositions yourself?
I will if I'm crossing the expert. Okay. I will. Okay. I'll read through it and summarize it myself, look for old depos, read through literally all of those and find any little piece of contradiction to my case, review their entire file, and then I like to try to forecast how the defense attorney's exam's going to go so that mine picks up nicely after they go. Other than that, I don't really have a match.
These osteophytes form over time.
Yeah,
right?
I don't have a form. I don't have a form. I don't have nice a formula though. I don't have a formula. I'm constantly.
This isn't something that can be caused by trauma, right, doctor?
I pretty much do what everybody else does. The only thing that I'd add in there is before I get to the bias, I kind of like to try to tell a little bit of a story about, you know, no pain before, pain after, or if there was a prior, you know, they had this prior, it resolved, then they had this incident and immediate pain all the way up through your IME. Just so, you know, you can start to tell that story. You really tell your side of the case through that expert as long as you take a good expert deposition and you kind of set them up for trial. Mm-hmm. Because they've reviewed the records. They know what the story is. And if they at some point go rogue and say no, then like Atticus was saying, well, you work for these guys 90% of the time, don't you? You make $800,000 a year doing it. So that's really the only little tidbit that I would add. But I think we all kind of have the same general things that we try to get out during a cross-examination.
Going back to the CV topic, I actually don't ignore the CV. I lock them in that those are all of the publications, all of the talks, because most of these experts have given a lot of talks for the defense side or to insurance companies. And once you lock them in that their CV contains everything, you can go out there and Google and probably find some defense talk that they list that's very like litigation oriented. Right.
Well, that was an old CV counsel. I don't know why it was attached to the deposition.
Right, it's not updated.
It didn't update it, yeah. So we're actually running short on time. We only have a couple of minutes left. So I want to hear a piece of advice from each of you. If somebody that's a new attorney taking their first expert deposition, what piece of advice would you give them, Sebi?
I'd say less is more. I don't think you need to, you know, one of the things that as a young lawyer, you think you need to sit there and take a 2-3 hour depo. And you know, oftentimes you get what you need in, you know, an hour or so. Sometimes not though. There's an exception to all this, but you know, most cases you can take a pretty effective depo in an hour, hour and a half and get everything you need. But then you're, you know, as a young lawyer, you're thinking once you get to that point, oh man, like there's gotta be more, right? So you're panicking a little bit.
What am I missing?
So I would just say, you know, get in there, get what you need and get out.
Gray?
You're not going to change the defense expert's opinion. You're just not. So don't fight with them on that. You know, get their opinions, get the bias, get what you need, and then get out.
Yeah, that's good advice. I'd say don't be afraid to make sure you pigeonhole them in their opinions. They can say whatever they want. They can say the moon is made out of green cheese, but you have to pigeonhole them. Don't be afraid to stand up to the doctor, economist, or whoever, and limit how far they're going with their opinions. Because if I'm the expert and you hire me, I'm going to try to keep the door open on everything forever until you limit me. How far are you going to go, right? Yeah. So just, if you do nothing else, get their opinions locked in and see how far they'll go. Doctor, you believe he was injured? Yes. But you don't believe the epidural was necessary? Correct. So how long do you believe that they were suffering from this injury? 3 to 6 months. Whatever. But now you've locked them, right? Like, yeah, I think it's important to lock them in.
And if you have any questions, specific, you know, people out there listening, if they have any specific questions, everybody on this panel I know, and, you know, we're happy to take questions. Give us a call if there's something that's just, you know, you can't figure out or you just need, you have a question, you know, feel free to call any one of us. We're happy to help you out.
And actually, Jenny England from our firm is always available by phone.
Yeah, she loves to talk on the phone.
On her cell phone.
She really does.
BB, any advice to young lawyers taking their first expert depo?
I would say make sure you understand. I think young lawyers that get in, experts like to use really big words, say things in vague or confusing ways, because so many people, when they start to feel stupid, they give up. Right, that's a game. So make sure you understand. Ask the question 10 different ways if you have to, but don't walk out of there without really comprehending the expert opinions.
That's a good point. Great point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You can learn a lot about medicine and things like that by defending your own experts.
Yeah, that's
sounds like kind of a, you know, oh, I got to defend this depo, you know, but go to those. That's how I learned a lot of the medicine.
Absolutely.
I sat through a 3-hour voc rehab depo that I actually understood. Oh, this is what you're saying. Okay, I got it.
So what is loss of earning capacity, Grayson?
I really don't know. Ask my expert.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to the panel for coming. And no sleep till justice. Thank you. If you have any questions, media@justiceteam.com. And thanks for listening.
You're a wrestler. That's good. That was good.
He does.
Radio voice.
I like your radio voice.
It's solid.
Well, I know you don't want to be injured all your life, but don't settle that case tonight. I said it's not too late. And I don't remember what I read. Don't remember what they said. I guess it doesn't matter. I guess it doesn't matter anymore. You're gonna go to the expert store. You're gonna give them all your money. They'll tell the jury what it wants to hear. They tell me it's cool, but I just don't believe it. Tell out.